In my household, my family enjoys watching episodes of a TV show called Corner Gas, the original series. This was produced around 2004 to 2009, and it's a Canadian TV show which is set in a fictional small town known as Dog River in Saskatchewan. And the theme song of this comedy show sings about how there's not a lot going on. And so it's a very ordinary kind of, you know, it's kind of like for those of you who like Seinfeld, but maybe for people who are less neurotic or more ordinary, it's like very, like a show about nothing. It's just a very ordinary, it's a very gentle show. It's a very funny show. And so we get lots of kicks out of watching episodes of, you know, when there's not a lot going on, you know, what happens. And one of the particular TV episodes titled Pandora's Wine is an episode where two of the main characters, Oscar and Emma, choose to invite over someone named Lacey, who is newer to town. And they try and be hospitable, right? Show that they're good neighbors. They invite her over. And they invite her over to dinner. Emma's an excellent cook. And Lacey says, well, what can I bring over? Oh, nothing. Don't worry about it. We're good. Just come over and enjoy our hospitality. Lacey disregards that and brings over a bottle of wine, okay? And they, of course, then serve this wine, and it is wonderful wine. And they have a lovely dinner, and you think that's the end of the story. No, it's not the end of the story, is it? What happens? Well, you would think that Oscar and Emma would have been delighted about such a wonderful evening with Lacey, but instead, they are just beside themselves in agony because, as they say, Lacey has now bumped them up into a new wine bracket, and they can no longer tolerate the wine that they had been drinking before Lacey came over is just no longer adequate. They realize she has brought over this expensive bottle of wine and that they don't want to have to pay for all of the time. And so they are just fuming. How dare she bring over, how dare she do this and bump us into a new wine bracket? So Emma decides that she is going to invite Lacey back over for more food, and this time for brunch. And so Emma is then talking with another character, who is her grown son, about inviting Lacey over and asks if he would come as well. And as she's describing what's going to happen, he says, oh, you're having a revenge brunch. Because she wants to prepare all these foods that are so delectable. You know, of course, then bump Lacey into a new food bracket and have all these appetites and desires and just no longer be satisfied, you know, with the ways things are. And of course, the show goes off the rails with, you know, their hijinks. And it kind of all ends, it ends in a very lighthearted manner. But one of the reasons that show has kind of stuck with me is, on one level, there's an absurdity about having revenge brunch, right? But it's also humorous because if we are to be honest with ourselves, there's things that we do in the name of hospitality that are that kind of thing, right? Where we might do things not purely for selfless reasons. Maybe they're to help get someone under our thumb a little bit, or maybe to, you know, help get ourselves up in the pecking order and whatnot. And there's all these weird complexities sometimes involved with why we give gifts and why we host parties. And so it's no wonder then that Jesus weighs into these things, right? These ordinary parts of life, like when you have a party or when you're inviting people over, we have Jesus sharing some words on that. And in many ways, Jesus' words that we just heard read very recently are pretty straightforward, right? And the first teaching was very straightforward about when you show up to a party, right? If you remember what he said, don't Don't take the highest seat, right? Because what if someone more important than you comes and then you look really embarrassed, you know? So you think, oh, that's a really practical tip. Thanks, Jesus. That helps me get ahead in life. I should go find something like pretty like standard and then they're going to lift me up and oh, hooray, I look like a great guy. Okay. And then in the second story that we heard read, we hear Jesus saying, when you host a lunch or dinner, Don't invite the people you know. Invite strangers, right? People who will not necessarily automatically repay you with hospitality. And we, of course, have integrated that kind of teaching into our Christian practices, right? The reasons that we show hospitality and our acts of service and when we're hosting meals and when we're doing things as a church, we're often doing things that are meant to be beyond ourselves, not just for our own gratification, but for caring for another person and showing glory to God. You know, we've integrated that into a lot. But it would be kind of interesting, though, if you only invited people you didn't know, right? Like, my son is having a birthday party this week, and he might think it a little strange if I invited strangers to his birthday party and not his friends, right? He's going to have four of his buddies over, and if I invited four adults that he didn't know, he would probably be on the phone to grandma. you know, so... So we have these two teachings of Jesus, but you know, we kind of get it, right? Like, okay, Jesus, I get it. I should know where to sit. I should be generous to other people. I got it. Okay, I got it. Well, that's not it, is it? That's not the end of the story, right? Of course, Jesus is getting into something a little bit more than the nuts and bolts of how to succeed in business without really trying. What he's really getting into is something a little bit more significant. And I think it's a little bit of what Josh spoke about last week when he talked about how parables are surprising, but often in subtle ways, they turn expectations around. And in this particular piece, these are actually parables that were taught. The added interest and twist in today's parable is that this parable is actually tied together with another parable, but that parable doesn't show up until four chapters later in Luke. So it's like you think you got the answer, but of course, if you are an early Christian, you wouldn't just be taking out one random story or two. You would know like the whole narration, right? You're going to be listening to the whole narrative arc of Luke. And so if you think you got the answer, you're feeling like, yep, I got this, Jesus, I got this. I know where to sit. I know where to, I should invite some friends. I know how to be a wonderful, righteous person by following your practices that you've lifted up. But of course, in the chapter 14 of Luke, what the key tagline is that Jesus is constantly getting away at in the Gospel of Luke in particular is the phrase from verse 11, all who lift themselves up will be brought low, and all those who make themselves low will be lifted up. And he's constantly getting at that from different angles and different stories as we were to read through the whole Gospel of Luke. And this particular line, this very specific line, all who lift themselves up will be brought low, and those who will make themselves low will be lifted up, resurfaces in chapter 18, lest we think that the gospel writer is being subtle. He just says it flat out. So what is the other parable that goes with these two parables that is four chapters later? Well, it's the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector, something that you may or may not have heard of before, and so I'm going to reread it, whether or not you have it memorized. This story goes like this. Jesus told this parable to a certain people who had convinced themselves that they were righteous and who looked on everyone else with disgust. Two people went to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed about himself with words like, God, I thank you that I'm not like everyone else, crooks, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of everything I receive. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even lift his eyes to look toward heaven. Rather, he struck his chest and said, God, show mercy to me, a sinner. I tell you, this person went down to his home justified rather than the Pharisee. For all who lift themselves up will be brought low, and all who make themselves low will be lifted up. All right, so here we have it, these parables that are going together and these reflections about all who lift themselves up will be brought low, and those who make themselves low will be lifted up. Now, in Christian teachings, we tend to talk about this phrase more succinctly when we use the term humility. And in fact, if you were to read the Common English Bible, which is the translation I'm reading through today, the title of the first two parables that I read for you was Teachings on Humility and Generosity. And this is what I want to spend a little bit of time on for the rest of our time together this morning, the teachings of humility and what it means to be brought low or be lifted up. Because I think that although it is a very central teaching in the Christian tradition, it is one that comes with a lot of baggage and often misdirection and misappropriation. And so I want to speak a little bit toward my own interpretations of the teachings of humility and helping us to think about what the teachings of humility is and what the teaching is not about. The first is that often when we talk about the word humility, the way it is used is actually talking more about someone being humiliated versus displaying humility. And I want to talk a little bit about the difference between humiliation and humility, because they are very, very different. Humiliation it's a power move. It's when someone is trying to control you with guilt or shame, plain and simple. They're trying to manipulate you with words or actions or some kind of power that they have in order to get you to behave the way they want you to behave. And it never ends well, does it? Humility, though, is something very different. Joan Chittister describes humility as the ability to know ourselves as God knows us. And if we think about it, the word humility, it has in the root of its word, it has the word humus, or earth. So someone who is genuinely humble or has humility is someone who knows what they're made of. Okay? That's another important way I think we need to look at the word humility. I know what I'm made of. And of course, we're created in the image of God, right? And someone who is humble, as Chittister writes in another book of hers, she writes, humility is when we finally learn not to say, that's the way I am. Now we are able to say with great goodwill and certain faith, there is more that I can become. Now, one of the wonderful and beautiful things about teachings on humility, and if this is something of interest to you, I invite you to be able to talk with me more about it, because it's something that's very personalized, our journey of humility, kind of knowing and understanding the stuff that we're made of. There are a couple of key pieces in our Christian wisdom tradition about teachings of humility. And some of them are actually most beautifully fleshed out through the Benedictine teachings, which are integrated in the Rule of St. Benedict. It's a 12-step process, the teachings of humility. And I'm not going to go through all 12 today because it's already 10:38. But I want to tell you this. In the genuine teachings on real humility, the first step is knowing that God is God and I am not. And all the rest of them are a journey where we have trusted wisdom figures and community to help us figure out how to discover the stuff that we are made of and letting go of the stuff that we're not made of. Letting go of these false messages and the lies and all the junk that get thrown on us in this thing we call life, whether it's because of our own ego or because of just being human and, you know, the messiness that we have with one another. And a real journey of humility is one that at the end of the day gives you a chance to let yourself be completely honest with God and let God be completely honest with you. Easy peasy, right? It is not easy to always be honest with God, right? And it's not necessarily because we are intentionally trying to lie to God. Sometimes it's because we haven't even been honest with ourselves, right? And that's built into our understandings of humility, of being honest with ourselves. And I wanted to share with you this morning an example. If you're trying to understand like the teachings of humility, I want to share with you a personal example of a journey that I had with humility lately. Well, they're daily, so I don't have time to tell you all of them, but this one in particular. I just had my 45th birthday this winter, and when you turn one of those birthdays ending in 5, I'm now old enough where it automatically triggers medical review, right? That is. Like, if I were to summarize my life, I think it would be the example of going to the eye doctor last summer, and she's like, oh my goodness, you don't need bifocals. Like, she was astounded. You know, and I'm like, thanks. You know, that's humility right there, right? Like, but anyways, but I had one of those just natural medical screening things set up in the winter, and went and I got it taken care of, and everything was fine, right? Everything was fine. And after the screening, I said to my husband, I said, oh, I'm just so glad. You know, I knew it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal, no big deal, but like, I'm really glad that it was okay. And he looked at me and he's like, why are you lying to me? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, it seems like maybe it was a big deal, because if you're telling me you're super relieved that it was okay, maybe you weren't okay. And I kind of scratched my head and realized, oh yes, I've been lying to myself this whole time, haven't I? I have not been honest. In fact, this medical screening, I was totally petrified about it for months before it happened. And you know what? And I had right to be, because if you look at my family history, there was actually several people who died of this particular illness by the time they turned 60. So of course, this would be something that might totally terrify me on the inside, because of my family history and my experiencing of grief. And you know, you can just imagine all the stuff. But what was the lie I kept telling myself? Oh, this is no big deal. I'm totally fine. My life is great and everything is going wonderfully. You know, not humble, right? Just full of lies inside. And it took someone like my husband to call me on it, right? Like, stop kidding me. Stop kidding me. You're being ridiculous. Hey, guess what? It's okay to be scared once in your life. And he was able to do it in such a way that did not bring on guilt or shame, right? He was not doing this to humiliate me. He was doing this to help me release myself from a lie that I was telling myself. And in the process of being released from the lie, what happened? I was finally able to say to him and to say to God, you know what? That was scary. And you know what? Thank you, God, for helping me through it, because if I had to do this again, I probably would have asked you earlier for help. And in the acknowledgement of the fear, God was also able to say, you know, it looks like maybe you're also holding on to some other things, right? Like you just named to me about how you had some family members die of this illness. And you seem to be pretty upset about that. You want to talk about that? To which I'm like, no, leave me alone. No, no, no. We talk about it, and there's weeping, you know, weeping and sadness and anger, you know, about their deaths and like all this stuff, right, that I'm experiencing. That was all happening within me the whole time, wasn't it, guys? Right? Me lying about saying no big deal, that's the part that God is waiting for us to just release, right? And that this is the kind of stuff when we talk about the journey of humility. These are the ways of humility. Because the more honest we are with ourselves and with God, the more God is able to be at work in our lives. In fact, if you were to read through the full teachings on humility, especially in the Benedictine tradition, Benedict says that the whole reason that we even consider any of these teachings on humility is so that we can have perfect love that casts out fear. That, of course, is a reference to 1 John 4, verse 18. Perfect love that casts out fear. And of course, fear loves to brood where there are lies, right? And so the more that we are able to let the truth shine forth, the more the truth can set us free, the more we are able to have that divine love present in our lives, and the more honestly we can just step up like that, you know, tax collector that's like, God, have mercy. God, have mercy. You know, help. Help, I'm afraid, or I'm embarrassed. You know, one of the things that also keeps us bound is sometimes we feel an incredible amount of guilt or shame in our lives. And a number of years ago, my spiritual director told me point blank, she said, guilt that lasts more than 30 seconds is not God. Same thing with shame. If it lasts for more than 30 seconds, that is not God. And I left puzzled for a few years, still working on it actually. But what is it that she really meant, right? Like when you're experiencing that kind of guilt or shame, that is never how God works. That is either your own junk or someone else trying to humiliate you. But that is not the road of humility. Humility is always, always perfect love casting out fear, plain and simple. And that is why we come to God in prayer and worship, knowing that God does have the power to do that in our lives, that God's love is always greater than even the greatest fears that we face. And this is why we always take that journey every year to Easter, right? To recognize that even in our darkest, most horrible fears, God is present, right? In that journey to the cross, in that experience of death, and that yet God always answers it with resurrection. And that is something awaiting each and every one of us every single day. And for that, I say thanks be to God. Amen.